calling others to Islam. Dawah. Virtues of calling others to Islam. Engaging in dawah work is indisputably one of the best deeds in the sight of Allah, and is highly commended in the Quran and the Prophet's Sunnah. Evidence to this effect includes the following. 1. Dawah is the means to success in this life and in the hereafter. As the Quran states, "Let there be a group among you who call others to good, and enjoin what is right, and forbid what is wrong. Those who do this shall be successful." Surat Al-Imran 3:104. 2. No one has a better speech than that of those who engage in dawah activities. Commending such people, the Quran says, "Who speaks better than one who calls to Allah, does good works, and says, 'I am surely one of the Muslims'?" Surat Fusilat 41:33. It is clear, therefore, that there is no one whose speech is better than that of a person who calls people to the truth, for he is their guide to their Creator and Lord, and the one who takes them out of the darkness of misguidance into the light of faith. 3. Engaging in dawah work testifies to one's compliance with Allah's command, "Call to the way of your Lord with wisdom and fair admonition, and argue with them in the best manner possible." Surat An-Nahl 16:125. A person who dedicates himself to such a noble task must invite others to Islam with wisdom, making sure that he knows the personality of the people he wants to call to Islam, so as to choose the best possible method to carry out the task, all the while arguing with them in the kindest, most gracious manner which appeals to them. 4. Engaging in dawah work was the very task carried out by all of Allah's messengers without exception, foremost of whom was Prophet Muhammad, whom Allah sent to all mankind as a witness over people, giving news to the believers of immense reward in the hereafter, warning the unbelievers against severe punishment, and spreading his light to all mankind. The Quran says, "Prophet, we have sent you as a witness, as a bearer of good news and a warner, and a caller to Allah by his permission and a light-giving lamp. Convey to the believers the good news that they will receive immense favor from Allah." Surat Al-Ahzab 33:45-47. 5. Inviting people to Islam is the source of unlimited goodness. For each person you invite to Islam, you will get the same rewards for his prayer, worship, and teaching others. What a great blessing Allah bestows on those who engage in dawah work. The Prophet said, "Whoever calls to guidance will have a reward similar to that of those who follow it, without the reward of either of them being lessened at all." Sahih Muslim 2674. 6. The reward Allah has in store for those who invite others to Islam is far better than all the enjoyments of the present world, for such a reward is from Allah Himself, the Most Generous, who will recompense them abundantly for such a noble endeavor. "If you turn away from me, remember I ask no reward from you. Only Allah will reward me, and I have been commanded to submit completely to Him." Surat Yunus 10:72. The Prophet also said in this respect, "If Allah guides one man through you, this will be better for you than possessing red camels." Sahih al-Bukhari 2847, Sahih Muslim 2406. Camels were considered the most valuable property in ancient Arabia, and the red variety was the most prized of all. Requirements of the correct manner of inviting others to Islam. Allah describes the correct manner of engaging in dawah work as one which is characterized by certain qualities which distinguish it from others. These qualities are as follows. Insight and knowledge. A caller to Islam, da'iyah, must be knowledgeable about the truth to which he invites others, clearly presenting divine instructions to them based on clear evidence. Say, "This is my way. I invite to Allah on the basis of a clear proof, and so do those who follow me." Surat Yusuf 12:108. He does not have to know many things before he starts calling people to Islam. Whenever he learns something new, he has to teach it to others. For instance, if he learns about the necessity of not associating anyone in the worship of Allah, he ought to convey this information to others. Likewise, If he learns about some aspects of the beauty of Islam, he must convey this to them. To put it in a nutshell, he must convey anything that he learns about Islam, even if what he has learned is one single verse of the Quran. As the Prophet once ordered, "Convey what you learn from me to others, even if what you have learned is one verse of the Quran." Sahih al-Bukhari 3274. This was the very practice of the Prophet's companions. They would learn the principles of Islam in a few days, and then they would go back to their people to call them to Islam and arouse their interest in it, especially through their high moral character. Wisdom. The Quran says, "Call to the way of your Lord with wisdom and fair admonition, and argue with them in the best manner possible." Surat An-Nahl 16:125. Wisdom is the ability to make sensible decisions and give good advice at the appropriate time and place because of the experience and knowledge one has. Given the differences between people regarding their character and level of understanding, a caller to Islam must choose the appropriate method to engage in da'wah. Work and wait for the appropriate opportunity to win them over. He must approach them with gentleness and compassion, and engage in a calm and balanced dialogue which does not instigate ill feelings and inflame hatred. It is for this reason that Allah reminds His Messenger of the favors He bestowed upon him by making him gentle with people. It is by Allah's grace that you deal gently with them. Had you been harsh and hard-hearted, they would surely have deserted you. Surat Al-Imran 3:159. Inviting family members and relatives to Islam. A person who has been guided to Islam must do his best to call his family members and relatives to this religion, because they are the closest and dearest people to him. He ought to endure any harm he may encounter patiently whilst doing so. He should also use all possible means in order to show them the truth. As the Quran states, "Instruct your family to offer their prayers and be steadfast in observing them yourself." Surat Taha 20:132. Some callers to Islam may find that people to whom they are not related favorably respond to the invitation, whilst their closest relatives refuse to do so, which causes them a great deal of distress and disappointment. A successful caller to Islam, however, never gives up hope. He tries his best to guide them to the truth, using various methods and techniques, and praying to Allah to guide their hearts, even under the bleakest of circumstances. The Prophet did just that with his uncle Abu Talib. He left no stone unturned in calling him to Islam, and continued doing so until the last moments of his life. When Abu Talib was on his deathbed, the Prophet begged him, "Dear uncle, say, 'La ilaha illallah,' there is no God worthy of worship except Allah, so that I may be able to intercede for you on the Day of Judgment." Sahih al-Bukhari 3671. Sahih Muslim 24. Abu Talib, however, declined to do so, and so he died a polytheist. It was on this occasion that Allah revealed the following verse: "You cannot guide whoever you please. It is Allah who guides whom He will. He knows best those who receive guidance." Surat Al-Qasas 28:56. A new Muslim, as soon as he embraces Islam, must build a strong and healthy relationship with his relatives and acquaintances, Muslims and non-Muslims alike. He must also observe high moral standards when dealing with them, for Islam is not a call to isolation and withdrawal from social life. Indeed, showing kindness to people and observing high moral standards when dealing with them is the best way to introduce them to this great religion with which Prophet Muhammad was sent to perfect noble character. Observance of high moral standards and good treatment must start at home, amongst family members, children's religion. According to Islamic teachings, all human beings without exception are born Muslim, with an innate inclination to believe in Allah, fitrah, and that they may follow another religion following the manner in which their parents teach them and bring them up. As the Prophet said, every child is born with the natural inclination to surrender to Allah, fitrah, that is, to be a Muslim, but then his parents make him a Jew, a Christian, or a Zoroastrian. Sahih al-Bukhari 1292 and Sahih Muslim 2658. Regarding non-Muslim parents' children, we consider them non-Muslim in this life, If they die young, Allah, the best of judges, who does not wrong anyone, and who knows their secrets and yet what is more hidden, will test them on the Day of Judgment. Those who obey will be admitted into paradise, while those who disobey him will be consigned to hellfire. When Allah's messenger was asked about the fate of the children of the polytheists on the Day of Judgment, he replied, "Since Allah created them, he knows what sort of deeds they would have done." Sahih al-Bukhari, 1317. However, when can we consider non-Muslim parents' children Muslim in this life? To prove this, there are different cases, including the following. 1. If the parents or one of them embrace Islam, children born to them will be considered followers of the religion of the parents that is better than the other, namely Islam. 2. If a child, who is able to distinguish between right and wrong but has not necessarily reached the age of puberty, embraces Islam, even though his parents are not Muslim, he will equally be considered Muslim. A Jewish boy used to serve the Prophet. One day the boy became ill, and the Prophet went to visit him. He sat by his head and said, "Become a Muslim." The boy looked at his father, who was also sitting by his head. The father said to him, "Obey Abul Qasim." The boy then embraced Islam. The Prophet left, saying, "Praise be to Allah, who has saved him from the fire." Sahih al-Bukhari, 1290. Is it recommended to change one's name after embracing Islam? The general rule is that a new Muslim can retain his name and does not have to change it at all. In fact, the changing of names was not known among the Prophet's companions. May Allah be pleased with them. Many people have embraced Islam and retained their non-Arabic names, unless the name has a bad meaning. A name may be changed in the following cases. 1. If it indicates servitude to other than Allah or has a meaning which contradicts Islamic beliefs. Names which indicate servitude to other than Allah include Abdul Masih, slave of the Messiah, which is common amongst Arab Christians, and Abd un-Nabi, slave of the Prophet, which is common amongst some Muslims. This also includes names which have a meaning that contradicts Islamic beliefs, such as Shanuda, commonly used among Egyptian Christians, the Copts, which means the Son of God. Glorified is he, and high exalted above what they say. Names which indicate one of Allah's attributes are not allowed either. An example of this is to ascribe to someone an attribute which is completely unique to Allah, such as the title King of Kings. 2. If the name implies something that is offensive or not approved of by people with sound moral values. Indeed, Allah has declared all bad things without exception unlawful. Therefore, it is not appropriate to retain a name which carries a bad meaning after converting to Islam. As the Quran states, evil is a bad name after faith. Surat al-Hujurat, 49:11. Sunan al-Fitra, practices dictated by man's pure nature. Islam encourages Muslims to maintain the best outward appearance possible. What does the phrase Sunan al-Fitra mean? Sunan al-Fitra refers to a set of hygienic or cosmetic practices enjoined by Islam that is consistent with the pure nature in which Allah has created mankind, and which serves to enhance their appearance and perfect it, making Muslims combine both inward and outward perfection. The Prophet said, "The customs of nature, Sunan al-Fitra, are 5. Circumcision, removing the pubic hair, trimming the moustache, clipping the nails, and plucking the underarm hair." Sahih al-Bukhari, 5552. Sahih Muslim, 257. 1. Circumcision is the act of removing the foreskin, the loose tissue, covering the glands of the penis. This generally takes place in the early days after the birth of a baby boy. It is a recommended act and one of the customs of nature with regard to men. It also has numerous health benefits, but is not a precondition for embracing Islam. One, however, would not be sinful if he does not get circumcised out of fear or for any other reason. 2. Removing the coarse hair that grows in the pubic area, the lower part of the abdomen just above the external genital organs, contributes to better hygiene and can be carried out using any means that would serve the purpose. 3. Trimming the moustache is permissible but not recommended. However, if a Muslim chooses to keep it, he must regularly trim it. 4. Letting the beard grow. Islam urges men to grow a beard, the hair that grows on the chin and cheeks of a man's face. 5. Letting the beard grow means not to shave it, in accordance with the Prophet's teachings. 6. Clipping the nails. A Muslim is required to clip his nails regularly in order to remove pathogenic organisms, dirt, and debris that generally get underneath fingernails. 7. Plucking underarm hair. A Muslim is required to remove his underarm hair by plucking it or by using any other means to serve the purpose in order to keep bad odors away. Conclusion. What's your next step? Once you have read this book, you will have taken the first step to learn about basic matters relating to your religion. Now, you need to translate what you have learned into action and make it a reality. For knowledge without practice will be a source of great regret on the Day of Judgment. You must also do your best to learn about other matters which you need in your daily life, but which are not covered in this book. A Muslim, no matter how strong his faith may be, always needs more guidance. Hence the prayer, guide us onto the straight path. Surat Al-Fatiha 1:6, which is in the greatest surah in the Quran that a Muslim repeats daily in his prayers. Be mindful of Allah as best you can. Neither the present book nor any other book will provide you with detailed information about situations and incidents you may come across. Therefore, in addition to seeking the opinion of religious scholars, you must try your best to be mindful of Allah as much as you can regarding the daily occurrences and relationships concerning that which is not possible to refer to scholars, as evidenced by the verse, be mindful of Allah as best you can. Surat At-Tahabun 64:16. Try your best to stay close to Muslim community members. Try to be as close to Muslim brothers and sisters as possible. Visit Islamic centers and share Muslims' joys and sorrows. Despite the Prophet's unshakable faith, Allah commanded him to seek the company of righteous people. Content yourself with the company of those who supplicate their Lord morning and evening, desiring his face. Surat Al-Kahf 18:28. The Prophet also warned against leaving the company of Muslims, as doing so is one of the ways that are bound to lead one astray, just as a sheep that is far from the flock becomes more vulnerable to wolf attacks. The Prophet said, stay close to one another, for the sheep that the wolf eats is the one that wanders away from the flock. Mustadrak al-Hakim 5:6-7. Therefore, seeking the company of Muslims is one of the ways to remain on the right path. Doing so becomes even more necessary for new Muslims who are obviously in dire need of assistance and support. May Allah guide you, keep you on the right path, and shower His blessings upon you, both outwardly and inwardly.